Welcome to Radio at Firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters. Firehouse.com brings you the leaders of the nation's fire, rescue, and EMS services, the top columnists and educators, and today's most important issues, headlines, and comments. Listen right on your desktop or download and listen on the go to Firehouse.com.
Okay, welcome to the Leader's Toolbox, Firehouse.com. I'm Rich Gassaway, your host. We're at Fire Rescue International in Dallas, Texas, and I have the pleasure of having as my guest on the show today Howard Cross of Howard Cross & Associates. Howard has been a consultant for fire and emergency services for 24 years on the national level. He travels around to fire departments and teaches leadership, strategic planning, succession planning, facilitation skills. He's also a resident instructor of the National Fire Academy's Executive Fire Officer Program, where he teaches the years one and four curriculum. Howard was one of my instructors as I went through the EFO program in the mid-80s, and he is also the author of a book called Group Games Collection. It's interactive activities, icebreakers, and team-building exercises for organizations. So welcome, Howard.
No, thanks, Rich. I appreciate your asking me here.
Well, I was looking through the program selection here at Fire Rescue International. I came across a class that you were teaching called Leadership, the Seductive Lie. And it's an intriguing, eye-catching topic. And I wanted to invite you to be the guest and talk about this. And I guess the very first question is, what does that mean?
Oh, I like the title so much, I figured I better come up with a workshop to go with it. Well, what is a seduction, I guess, is what came to mind for me. It's something that isn't what it appears to be, and you get pulled into it. And moving through my career and talking with individuals and watching how they react to the idea of what it is to be a leader, I was struck by the idea that most people at first blanch don't recognize that it's not a position. It's not that I'm a chief. It's not that I'm a captain. It really is a set of choices that people make. It's actually three components. It's understanding and wanting to go somewhere that we currently aren't, a preferred place. I guess you'd call it a vision. And then recognizing that to get there, as often as not, it requires others to help in that journey. And for others to be involved in that, they need to buy into it. And that's where leadership comes in. It's the ability to move people to go in a direction that they wouldn't have gone in otherwise. And that really is the gist of the program that we just did, the Leadership, the Seductive Lie. It's recognizing that it doesn't, my job as a chief or as a captain or whatever is not inherently a leadership position. It has the opportunity for us to lead, but the fact is leadership is recognizing the vision and getting people to follow you. And that can be done in many cases more easily by someone without rank, interestingly enough, as someone with rank. So I guess rank is one of those things that gets in the way in many cases, or at least it clouds the picture of what leadership truly is.
Okay. And you said that there were three components, and I caught that you said that vision was one of them. And was involving others the second component, or did I miss?
No,
I
you miss? Didn't miss it.
Okay.
Actually, here's a visual for your people out in radio land. Have them point, take your index finger and point to something other than where you currently are, a place that you'd like to be. I know you're all doing it out there. Okay, so you're pointing to a place. That's our vision. It's where I'd like to be. Right now I'm pointing at the door. I'd love to be in the pool. I'm assuming that that's where the pool is. Okay, so there's one piece of it. It's the pointing. The second piece of it, and this is the difference between leading and wandering, is to lead, one implies, well, at least the word to lead, you have to have someone following. So the second component, and here again for you folks at home, get this visual, take your other hand and begin signaling to those people who are out there waiting to be shown the way, just have bringing them in, the hand motioning them to follow me, follow me. Now we have the two components. The third component is the piece in between the finger pointing and the come with me one, and that's me. Okay, it's what I bring that allows me, first of all, to see where we're going, see the preferred place, and to be able to convince others in a way that they want to follow. So those are the three pieces. Now, where you go, of course, there's so much to choosing where we're heading. And in the fire department, I mean, one of the things that I struggle with when I'm working with the departments I work with is where they want to be isn't clearly articulated. What do they see themselves as in 10 years? Are they going to be the same operation? Well, most of them would say, no, of course not. So what it is to lead in a department is to clarify what direction we're taking, what we want to be known as, what we want to be the best at. There's our pointing. The other piece is then getting people to see that, to buy into it. And buying into it is the tricky part, because telling people what it is, which is often what people think leading is, you tell people, you command people. The military model in itself, if I'm a general in parentheses will say leader. I don't buy that necessarily. General may be the person that gets others to do it, but in this day and age, it's not enough to give orders and have people follow with the commitment level that we're expecting them and actually need them to have. So that's a whole lot of wax there I'm giving you, but okay. What we're looking at is creating an ability to get people to follow because they choose to.
Okay. So the components are the vision, the follower, and the leader are the three components. Is mm-hmm. that okay? Now, I want to back up to the vision for a minute, because you say the vision is, you know, pointing out to the future and saying that's where I want to be. You can point a short distance, like I can point down to the table or to across the table we're sitting. I could point to the door, or I could point across the street, or I could point west to California. So the distance that I vision out to can be a great span of time and distance. What would be your recommendation when someone's preparing to establish the vision for their organization? Is there a right continuum of time to look out toward that gives the organization something to look forward to, but isn't so far out that it seems unachievable?
That's a tricky dilemma of sorts, because what we're dealing with is resources constantly changing, including the people who are in the organization. A chief or a senior staff or the entire department looking out 30 years, the chief isn't going to be around. A good deal of the staff isn't going to be around. Even 10 years out for some isn't realistic. What we're talking about is, whether it's a 10-year or a 3-year, it's recognizing that working together, we have the know-how and the wherewithal to create an organization that is better than it is today. And by better, it's...
It's okay.
That's the church bells.
We'll,
I apologize
that's
for that.
Okay.
That
we'll
was my
pause
fault.
And cut and okay. And re-pick it up where you say by what you mean by an organization that's better, and our editors will clean that out.
Okay. It's recognizing the core values of the department, first of all, and there's another piece, that recognizing what we stand for, what we truly value, is a component of where we are choosing to go. We will be the place the citizens go for every need regarding health and safety. I'm just throwing something out. But it's recognizing that what we are today is a work in progress. How do we know that we're improving? Well, we have to have a way of measuring it. We have to have another point on this continuum, where we are today being one end of it, and all the things we do well, and perhaps all the things we don't do well, and some of the things we don't do at all. And then the other end of that, moving towards it, how do we make better tomorrow what we're doing today, and make better the day after tomorrow what we did tomorrow? So whether it's a 10-year, and, you know, I wish I had a solution to it. Some will say 3 years is as far as you want to go. 10 years is as far. I think 10 years is not unrealistic to be talking about building building an organization with staying power. There are certain things that aren't going to change. You know, health and safety, the welfare of our citizenry. That stuff doesn't change. How we do it will change, but that's part of that journey. So I didn't really answer your number question, because I'm not sure that there is a number as much as there is an attitude of continual growth, which is what leaders do.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, that makes sense to me. The next obvious question that comes to my mind is, what are these, why are there so many challenges to leadership? Some people make it seem flawless, and there's some who struggle with it continually. What are some of these challenges, and what can aspiring leaders do to overcome them?
I think, first of all, accepting the reality that we're all capable of leading. I mean, there are some of us out there who believe that leaders are born. I would challenge that. There's certainly some people are more likely to be or can be more charismatic than others. I mean, charisma is one of the things that pops in when people think of your archetype leader. And charisma isn't necessarily the only thing going. If you look at a Stephen Jobs, he may be charismatic, but look at someone else who, who's that guy that runs Microsoft? Who is that guy?
Oh, Gates guy.
That Gates guy. You remember him? How quickly we forget. He's a philanthrope, or whatever the right word is. But people wouldn't call him charismatic, but truly a leader, and a very effective one. I think the challenge is that many of us don't really know, when we use that word, what it really means. That for me to be running an organization, I would like to have working with me, my staff, everyone that works under the department name, to be capable of leading when leadership is required. And understanding that, it can be very threatening to someone who has the idea that a leader is someone who has the answers and commands presence. You know, that typical historical model of that's related to military, I have to say, that the leader is unquestionable, the leader has the answers. I don't think that's fair to the leader, the formal leader. We all have answers to different questions. So when it comes, I guess the reason I suggest that it is challenging is to accept first that leadership can come from many different places, and it's not a full-time endeavor. It's hard for a lot of us. There's also this notion that I have to be visible as a leader. An effective leader is one who knows when to step aside and let the group lead. Leading from the front is okay. It makes sense. It's modeling the right behaviors. Leading from the back is okay when you allow others to feel that they are in the front and leading. So there's so much to it. And unfortunately, there's not a lot going on in the training field to address true leadership. So there's a lot of officer training, and there's a lot of good stuff out there. But when it comes to what it really means to lead, I think we're sorely lacking with that, that there's much to be said. We should be fielding and filtering and looking for leadership types when we hire the people coming into the fire service. Are we looking for the core competencies that allow these people to rise to make decisions that would be defined as leadership decisions when required, and knowing when to follow? So it's a tough one, and we don't allow our leaders, our formal leaders again, to even think that they should be doing it any differently. We basically almost force them to answer questions. We turn to them for the answers, and then when they don't give them or give the wrong ones, we criticize them.
Well, Howard, you travel around a good bit providing leadership development training for fire departments and workshops. I would guess on occasion you're invited into some place that perhaps historically hasn't done a lot in the way of developing their leaders. So they've identified there's a problem, and you get invited in to help them maybe get focused and do some of the visioning things and get working in a common direction. What are some of the signs and symptoms that you have seen in organizations that you've been called into where leadership training has been absent?
Leadership is risky behavior. It's Heifetz and Linsky, a book we use in the National Fire Academy for our executive leaders. Leadership on the Line defines leadership as the capacity to get people to accomplish what's called adaptive work. In other words, stuff that's outside of their comfort zone that may not have a definitive answer. It's basically getting people to feel the heat and move as a result of the heat, moving to a place where there's a better outcome. Now, that being said, going into an organization, your typical organization where, let's say, leadership hasn't been a topic of a whole lot of training, you will see individuals who are reluctant to step up to speaking out when they see something that is not, let's say, safe. I mean, one of the issues, everyone goes home, anything that has to do with firefighter safety, one of the issues is taking responsibility for one's own actions when it comes to safe behavior. I believe that's a leadership role for all of us. So you will see individuals who do not, that may see something that is clearly dangerous, clearly not a sensible thing to do, and not speak up. That the absence of the ability to take that risk is the lack of personal leadership. By taking that, by stepping up and saying it, not only are you dealing with the incident itself, but you're role modeling preferred behavior. And one of the outcomes, one of the many outcomes of effective leadership behaviors is it's contagious. It breeds responsibility, breeds responsibility. Mm-hmm. And lack of responsibility breeds lack of responsibility.
Mm-hmm. What, Howard, I know you have seen this along the way, as I have as well. People who get promoted into formal positions of leadership, and they're promoted from ranks that where they have established long-standing friendships with fellow firefighters, and now they're in a position of from being a peer to now being the boss. And I've seen people who struggle with that. When you talked about people not wanting to step up and take responsibility and do the right thing, I've seen so many times that couched as I don't want to be the one who tells my friend that you know, their performance isn't where it should be, or they're not being safe as they should be. What's some advice for these officers who find themselves struggling with that dichotomy between being a friend and being a boss or being a leader?
There's a difference between leadership and management, and what I'm hearing from that is more of a management challenge. That there are, you're stepping in when you get promoted, you're stepping into a managerial role that has responsibilities, and those responsibilities are sometimes spelled out more clearly than other times, and it includes dealing with people who had been your peer group, now dealing with them in a different capacity. That's one of the areas where I think creates a lot of confusion. Telling someone what to do or giving them guidance or coaching them doesn't necessarily have to do with leadership. It has to do with good management. It can be leadership. But I would say that that aside, whatever it takes, being clear on the role and what's expected of the role allows me to do to be clear with the people who I used to be friends with, who I can still be friends with, that this is my job. Here's my job. In fact, making sure that they understand what the job is, that I'm going to be responsible for doing these sorts of things, you're going to be responsible for doing these sorts of things, and we'll hold each other accountable for it. I would even suggest that they invite the people who are now reporting to them to help in keeping us all accountable. So now we're working together rather than, oh, you're not treating me well. You're not treating me, hey, I thought we were buddies, so we could let certain things slide.
It popped into my mind another scenario of things that I've heard people say along the way when I've been doing programs is that a person who has been in a firefighter's position maybe did certain things that were not necessarily consistent with the organization's strategic direction, or maybe they had a safety policy that said you wear your seatbelts, as an example, and this person was not one who consistently wore their seatbelt. But then they get promoted, and now they look at their job differently as they should be the role model, as the one who says, you know, we wear our seatbelts and we always wear our seatbelts. But then when they try to enforce it, they're enforcing it on other people who say, you know, 2 months ago when you weren't an officer, you didn't wear your seatbelt. So, you know, you're kind of a hypocrite because now that you're a supervisor, you think that everybody should do this, but 2 months ago you didn't do it. So what advice would you give for those firefighters who someday might be in formal leadership positions about how their behavior now can set them up for future successes or challenges?
Wow. Enforcing rules versus understanding why we do things are significantly different. And what I would like to see in my fire department is us bringing people in and also nurturing those who we currently have as individuals who are constantly inquiring as to why we do what we do. I think that question, unfortunately for a lot of us, that question suggests resistance or lack of respect or lack of trust. And I don't say that that has to be. Asking why it is that we're being asked to do something is healthy. And if we can't answer that effectively, whether I'm a firefighter first year or I'm a captain or I'm riding or I'm a battalion chief, whatever it is, if we can't answer that, then we have an issue that's much deeper than enforcing, let's say, a seatbelt rule. I think one of the issues why so many of us, for example, with seatbelts don't wear them is because we don't truly embrace the idea of why not wearing them doesn't make sense. And for you to tell me it doesn't make sense only suggests to me that you think you know something I don't know. My natural tendency is to resist that. So I think a firefighter starting out should be asking why. Why are you asking me to do this? And the officer needs to be able to say, here's why. Or I don't know why, and let me find out. Or maybe we shouldn't be asking you that. You're right. It doesn't seem to make sense. If you get consistency in that, inquiry with answers, then wherever you are in the organization, I believe you are still consistent.
Okay. We are at Fire Rescue International. This is the Leader's Toolbox on firehouse.com. We're talking with Howard Cross from Howard Cross & Associates. When we turn from the break, we're going to talk about the follower's responsibility.
Radio at firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters.
Welcome back to the Leader's Toolbox on firehouse.com. I'm your host, Rich Gassaway. We're at Fire Rescue International in Dallas, Texas, and I've had the pleasure to sit down and talk with Howard Cross, a management consultant for fire and emergency services and a resident instructor at the National Fire Academy. He runs a company called Howard Cross & Associates and travels the United States teaching fire departments and emergency services organizations topics related to leadership and strategic planning, succession planning, and facilitation skills. We're talking about leadership, the seductive lie, a topic that Howard presented here at Fire Rescue International. And Howard, you talked about three components of leadership. We took on a vision, and we took on the leader, and the third component that I want to talk about now is the followers. What are some of the qualities of a good follower, and why is followership so important? important in this trio component of leadership?
Accepting followership as part of leadership is a hurdle. I mean, for me to be an effective leader, I also have to know when to follow. So there's that challenge to begin with. There is the notion that if I am a leader, I don't follow. And I'd say that puts us at risk. There are times when there is no need for me to be leading because others are doing well on their own with that. But for us to follow effectively, it requires the buy-in to the direction. And that brings up the whole relationship between one who is leading and one who is following. And that's a dynamic relationship that really requires the person who's asking one to follow to recognize what that follower values. Because to get someone to follow, you need to have it of value to them. So for a follower, how does one define an effective follower? One whose desires, values, needs are understood by those around them. And a follower also is a leader waiting to happen. For me to suggest that you're not going to lead until you've done this is inaccurate. There may be an opportunity at 5 minutes from now where someone who's currently in a follower role now takes on a leader role. So what does it mean to be an effective follower? Someone who has a high degree of trust in those who have pointed the way, a high degree of confidence in themselves, and also the desire to risk. Risk is a big piece of this. Without risk, you don't have reward, but also with risk, there's always the opportunity to have failure, which brings us to the environment itself. Does the environment that we're leading and following in support risk-taking? And if it does, all the better. If it doesn't, which is often the case, people will avoid taking the risks because of the consequences.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that makes sense. Out there in the listener land, I would suspect that there are some organizations where currently there is some disconnect between the leaders and the followers. You had started this out by saying the leader sets the vision by pointing in the direction, and in this room it was toward the door, and waves with their other arm saying, you know, come on followers and follow me. Maybe there's been some things that have happened in the organization that has created an environment of distrust or some unfavorable circumstances where the leaders and the followers are not sharing common ground. They're not necessarily working toward a common vision. What are some tips that the leaders or the followers could engage in that might try to mend that challenge relationship?
Relationships in the fire service historically came out, it's a byproduct of the relationship on the fire ground. We have a very clear set of expectations. Goals, roles, and procedures are very clearly delineated and enforced for the most part. And when not enforced, consequences are fairly dire, at least potentially. I mean, when I'm on the fire ground and I'm in command of any portion of it, I give an order, and that order is to be followed because we have it's a time-relevant issue. It's a time, a highly time-sensitive situation going on. But that is highly specific also to the environment of a fire or the environment of someone down on the street and needing intubation, whatever. But we take that back to the fire station, and without another model to put in its place, we think of that as the way it's supposed to be. So the idea of telling is part of it. You tell people and they do it. I would suggest that back in this fire station, what we need to work on constantly is telling less and asking more. Asking the question and then listening to it. The leader of today is one who listens effectively. and empowers the, by empowering means, sends the message to those around him or her that their perspective is valued. Even if we don't agree with it, it's valued. So to decrease the challenge atmosphere, I think it, especially those who have rank, should be modeling this inquiry, asking questions whenever there's an opportunity to ask questions, and then listening, and not imposing answers when there's no reason that your answer is any better than someone else's. I think that would go a long way to changing, to modifying, to growing an environment from one of challenge to one of collaboration.
Okay. Well, what are some of the organizational implications of leadership? I guess good leadership and bad leadership.
Well, part of it is what we were just talking about. It's recognizing that the fire ground or the emergency ground is not the whole picture. You know, you ask anybody in any department how much time they spend actually dealing with what it is their mission is. I mean, in direct, let's say a fire, responding to a fire. The answers, I just asked that today to a group of people, and the answers ranged from a high of maybe 30% of their time, and that was a very active fire station that was basically out all the time, to around 3%. Well, gosh, 30% or 3% leaves you with a majority of time when we are not responding to a crisis. So the crisis orientation that we're used to has to be examined. That works in a crisis situation. The organizational implications are recognizing that the organization is much more than just what we do in a crisis. It's what we do when we're educating the public. What are we doing to educate the public to prevent the kinds of things that we see all too often? What are we doing with our own staff, our own firefighters, to decrease the likelihood of an untimely death or injury for them? The environment itself is not necessarily conducive to the kind of leadership that we're talking about. You know, when you hire someone who is a firefighter, who's come to want to fight fires, who's looking to the excitement that comes with even the word firefighter, they're two very vivid words. Mm-hmm. You hire a firefighter, and then when they are hired, you say, oh, by the way, the majority of your time is going to be spent in housekeeping and in doing prevention stuff, talking to kids, maintaining vehicles. It's the by the way statement. How likely are you going to have some fallout from that? Pretty likely. You know, we use the analogy of if you hire a horse to be a horse, and then you ask them to be something other than a horse. Oh, you're now going to be a camel. It's very difficult for that horse to ever be a camel. In fact, it's not going to be. So I guess what I'm describing, the organizational implications are, from the outset, when we are interviewing individuals for hiring, what are we looking for in those individuals makes a tremendous difference in the organizational complexion. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. Exactly. So should build... paraphrasing what I believe you said is build some components of evaluating leadership potential into the hiring process so that we're both carrying the message that leadership is going to be important in the future for that person, but also ensuring that we have people on board who have some potential to step up and be leaders.
And I'll say a nasty word, succession. That feeds directly into the organization's capability at filling positions as others leave positions. One of the biggest challenges we're talking about in more departments than I care to admit to is the tremendous turnover in the more senior ends, people either a drop program or they're retiring out, and people within the organization haven't been prepared to move into other positions. I don't think it's preparation. I don't think we have necessarily brought in the right talent to have them able to do that, and then we certainly haven't done anything to help them along the way. So it has much greater implications than just the present, but also the future of the organization.
Howard, would you say that there is a gap or a potential opportunity for developing future leaders that is maybe missing now. One of the things that I see and hear about often is fire departments spend a lot of time training people to be really good firefighters and give them a lot of technical training and continuing training to be good technical firefighters, but not much in the way of leadership. And then along comes an opportunity to take a promotion, and maybe they study a couple of books for 30 days, and if they score high enough, they're promoted, but that doesn't necessarily mean they're ready. Mm-hmm. What are some of the things that organizations should be doing? You talk about this succession planning. What should they be doing at the firefighter level to help get them prepared for succession, for the inevitable promotions that are going to come, and these firefighters are going to find themselves in formal leadership roles? How should they be preparing them?
You know, it's funny. I'd be out of business, and I wouldn't mind being out of business. The reason I'm doing what I'm doing is it's not happening in the departments. Training at every level on every aspect of what it means to be a leader, because that's what we're talking about. When we send people on the fire ground, certainly they're being told what to do, where to go. They're making choices that are life and death choices. They're not thinking twice about it. They're doing what I would define as leadership decisions in that space and time. So they understand it. They know it. Why is it then that we get back to the other stuff we're doing and we don't give them what they need? So I'd say any iteration, not officer training. Sure, officer training is important. But what about something that's dealing with making choices, taking responsibility, walking the talk, getting the folks around you to take responsibility? The contagiousness of this is something that every department could be doing so much with if they had the wherewithal to do that. I don't know if that really answers your question, but it brings up some real questions. There's much more to an effective organization than technical training. Mm-hmm. It's the human stuff. It's how do we interact? How do we live together?
The soft skills.
Yeah, someone call them soft. I kind of resist those because whenever it gets soft, people think hard, good, soft, less good.
Oh, okay.
But you're absolutely right. That's the terminology. It's the human skills.
Yes, human skills.
And the fire service, who else is carrying the banner for humanity? Who else carries it better than the fire service? So it's one of these contradictions. They carry that banner, but we don't give them any of the tools to do it other than the opportunity if they can figure it out themselves.
Yep. Makes sense. Okay, we're concluding this episode of the Leader's Toolbox on firehouse.com. I would like to thank my guest, Howard Cross, who runs the company Howard Cross & Associates. We will put a link to Howard's website, howardcross.com, on the bottom of the player page so that you can click on and see what his company does and the kind of things he's doing for the fire service. And if you want to be able to reach Howard, you can do that through his website as well. Howard, thank you very much for being my guest and for sharing some of your insight with my listeners on leadership, the seductive lie.
Rich, you're welcome, and I want to thank you for inviting me.
Okay. Till next time, we tell you to, or ask you to please be safe in your operations and work hard to provide leadership to your organizations. And thank you for listening, and we'll see you next time.
If you have a comment on this program, drop us a line at radio@firehouse.com. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned to firehouse.com for more broadcasts like these, or visit our website at www.firehouse.com/radio.